Chapter 16. Do Boffin politicians ever tell the truth?
Sure. They'll do anything to win an election.
Jason Solo, age 15. Victory was within his grasp. On the commander's deck of the Anakin Solo, air was whistling away through a web of hairline cracks in the blast shield. Kytus's day cabin was gone, and a concave blowout cup was forming in what used to be an interior wall. Lockdown alarms were blaring in every cabin on the bridge, and the entire command staff was running for the hatchways. But Kytus stood calmly in the tactical salon, his gaze fixed on the holodisplay, as though he were trying to make sense of the disjointed battle depicted there. He already knew what had happened, of course. The Jedi had used the blood trail to lure him into an ambush. Then Luke had led a desperate attack on the Anakin Solo in an attempt to take him out. And Kytus had survived. When the Jedi had begun their attack, he had been in his observation bubble, using his battle meditation to see through the Force what the fleet's sensors could not. He had been forced to watch the whole thing in his mind's eye, issuing useless orders and futile warnings as his sister and Zek took out the shields. A moment later, the stealth X's had rolled onto the Anakin Solo's upper hull, their Jedi-guided shadow bombs blasting holes four decks deep. Then Kytus had spotted the Besulik. When he realized Luke was flying it, his intestines had filled with ice. Knowing that Luke was coming for him, just as Kytus had seen in his visions, he had leapt from his meditation chair and rushed into the tactical salon, barely sealing the hatch before Luke launched his bombs. The hatch had held, and it was still holding. And now here Kytus was, staring at the holodisplay, but seeing a throne. A white throne in a brightly lit chamber. There was no one on it, but it was surrounded by 100 beings regal enough to belong in the seat. They were beings of all species, Bothans and Huts, Ishi Tib and Mon Calamari, even humans and squibs, and they all had the easy, amicable bearing of old friends. But what held Kytus there, what kept him staring at the vision with no regard for the screaming alarm sirens or the flimsoplast fluttering past on escaping air, was the tall, red-headed woman at the center of the crowd. She had her mother's thin, arcing brows and full-lipped mouth, but her nose was her grandmother's, small and not too long, with just a hint of a button at the end.
"Lord Kytus!"
Tahiri's voice had grown as shrill as the lockdown alarms, and she was tugging his arm, trying in vain to move him away from the holodisplay.
"What's wrong with you?"
"Wrong? Nothing. Nothing at all."
Kytus kept himself rooted to the deck, continuing to stare at his grown-up Alana until a piece of flimsoplast blew through the holograph. Then the white throne and the regal friends all faded away, and the face of his beautiful daughter twisted into the angry, hateful visage of his sister Jaina.
"Get ready, Kytus,"
she was warning him.
"Here I come."
Kytus laughed.
"I am ready, Jaina."
He turned his back on the vision, finally allowing Tahiri to pull him away.
"And I've already won."
"I'm sorry, my lord." Tahiri continued to hold his arm, literally dragging him out the hatch at the rear of the salon. "I don't understand."
"Jaina is coming for me,"
Kytus explained, still laughing.
"Luke Skywalker couldn't kill me. What does she expect to do?"
"I honestly don't know," Tahiri said. She sealed the hatch, and the whistle of escaping air grew inaudible. "But it wouldn't do to get careless. You're still recovering, and she's
practically dead already,
Titus said, starting toward the turbolift.
My sister is nothing to be concerned with. We've won. I've seen it.
Tahiri looked more worried than convinced, but rather than argue the point, she seemed content just to pull him into the turbolift. As they descended toward the auxiliary command center hidden deep in the well-protected bowels of the vessel, she took a moment to straighten her own robes, then stepped around in front of him and began to tug his robes into place.
"The Moths are in a bad state," she warned him.
"They're scared."
"Of course they're scared,"
Kaida said.
"They think only of themselves, and they fear only for their own lives."
Tahiri folded back the lapel of his outer cloak.
"Actually, they're just as worried about their assault fleet," she explained. "They're afraid we're going to lose the war."
"Lose?"
Kaida scoffed.
"Haven't they been viewing the intelligence briefings?"
"They're more concerned about our situation here," she said. "Actually, so am I."
Kaidus's temper began to rise. Boatu had already wiped out Neothel's traitors and trapped both the Bothan and Corellian fleets at Carbos 13. Admiral Atoko was neutralizing the Mandalorian nuisance by inflicting some sorely needed urban renewal on Keldabe, with just the remains of the Fifth Fleet. And yet, the Moths were worried because they had run into some relatively minor resistance here. Did they really expect Jedi to be defeated as easily as Mandalorians and Corellians? But Kaidus did not let his anger take control of him. That would do nothing but divert his attention, and he could not afford to lose his focus now. Not with Jaina on the loose. Not when he was so close to victory that he had actually seen it.
"I appreciate the warning, Tahiri,"
Kaida said.
"I'll be sure to reassure them."
"That might prove difficult, my lord," Tahiri said. "Even for you."
She looked down at her feet, and Kaidus could feel her gathering her courage.
"Tahiri, how long have we known each other?"
he asked.
"Tell me."
Tahiri nodded, then met his gaze.
"There's something they're keeping from us. I can feel it when I'm around them."
Kaidus smiled.
"Of course they're keeping something from us,"
he said.
"They're Moths."
Tahiri would not be put off by his jokes.
"They don't trust your abilities yet. Not really,"
she said.
"It might be better if we had never been ambushed."
"It's hard to argue against that,"
Kaida said.
"But I don't see what it has to do with our situation."
"Fix it," Tahiri said. "I think that's what it's going to take to keep their faith."
"Fix it how?"
Kaidus asked.
"Are you under the impression I can change the past?"
Tahiri looked confused.
"Well, yeah," she admitted. "You did it for me."
Now Kaidus understood.
"The kiss, you mean?"
"What else?"
she asked.
"You flow-walked me back to the battle on Banu Ras, and I kissed Anakin. If you could do that, why not flow-walk back and warn someone about the ambush?"
The turbolift reached the auxiliary command center and stopped. Before the door could open, Kaidus reached out and depressed the hold control. He knew why Tahiri believed he could do such a thing. Because he had allowed her to believe it. Her obsession with Anakin had been a convenient tool for him.
She had wanted, still wanted, to bring Anakin back so badly that Kytus had not even needed to imply the possibility. Tahiri had simply seized on the hope, and he'd used that to bend her to his will. But the time had come to disabuse her of that notion. With victory at hand, he needed to move Tahiri to the next stage, to help her develop into a true Sith lady with aspirations of her own, and the cold ruthlessness to achieve them. Kytus placed a caring hand on her shoulder.
Tahiri, I'm about to tell you something that's going to make you very angry. I want you to feed on its power, because you're going to need it before this last battle is over. But if you let it take control, you'll be lost. You'll never be any good to me again. Can you handle that?
Tahiri's confusion turned to distress.
What is it? She demanded. Are you telling me it wasn't real? That when we flow-walked back to see Anakin, we were just—
The flow-walking was real,
Kytus interrupted.
We did return to the battle at Banu Ras, and you did kiss Anakin. But the past didn't change. It can't.
Tahiri's eyes started to burn with denial.
That makes no sense, she said. If I really kissed him, then we changed the past.
Kytus shook his head.
When you drop a pebble into a river, what happens? There's a splash, and then the splash disappears. The splash is real, but the river doesn't change. It continues on just the same.
But it does change, Tahiri objected. Maybe you can't see it, but the pebble is still there, rolling along the bottom.
And the kiss is still there, too,
Kytus said. He reached out and gently tapped Tahiri's temple.
In there. That's where the bottom of the flow is.
In my mind?
In the way you perceive the past,
Kytus said. He was not surprised by the anger and disbelief in Tahiri's voice. When the Aang Tai monks had explained why he couldn't stop Anakin from dying, he had reacted the same way.
We went back to the battle on Banu Ras, and you kissed Anakin. What changed? The past, or your memory of the past?
Tahiri shook her head, still not ready to let go.
What about Tekli and the rest of the strike team? You were worried about them seeing us.
About remembering that they had seen us,
Kytus corrected.
Just like Raynar remembered seeing me when he crawled out of the tachyon flyer. But I wasn't there. I was on Coruscant being tortured by Vergeer. What Raynar remembered is the splash.
Kytus could tell by Tahiri's crestfallen expression that she was beginning to understand. But she wasn't quite ready to give up.
What about being harmed? She said. If we're just splashes, how come we had to be so careful about reacting to the past? A splash can't be harmed.
Kytus shook his head.
Tahiri, you know the answer. The mind is a powerful weapon, especially for Force users. If we started to remember being harmed...
He released the hold control, and the door slid open.
I'm sure you understand.
For a moment, Tahiri was speechless, her face red with fury,
her eyes damp. She stepped out of the turbolift.
"Oh, I understand, Lord Kytus. You're the slime under a hut's tail. Feed on that!"
Kytus smiled and calmly stepped into the vestibule, where two squads of black-armored GAG sentries stood at slack-jawed attention. Across from them, spilling down a long corridor servicing the Anakin Solo's auxiliary intelligence and control cabins, was a platoon of gray-armored elite guard stormtroopers who served as the Moff's collective bodyguard. Kytus stopped in front of the battle-seasoned GAG sergeant and gave a sigh of feigned exasperation.
"Apprentices," he said. "They can be so touchy about criticism sometimes."
The sergeant nodded sagely, and Kytus felt the tension drain from the force as guards from both groups decided that the trouble between the two Sith was nothing they needed to worry about.
"It's the same with all subordinates, my lord."
The sergeant glanced at a flat-faced Gotal with gray sensory cones and spotty cheek fuzz, then leaned closer and added,
"Sometimes I feel like killing them myself."
"It might be better if you let the enemy do that for us,"
Kytus said, giving an appreciative chuckle.
"Are you still in contact with Commander Barrett?"
The sergeant's expression turned grim.
"Not since we were hit, my lord," he said. "There hasn't been any contact at all from Dark Deck. Our entire comnet has gone dead. So has surveillance."
"I was afraid of that."
Kytus nodded, making the same assumption the sergeant obviously had, that Dark Deck, the nickname for ship security headquarters, had been destroyed in the StealthX attack.
"My sister has boarded the Anakin Solo. I need you to organize a search."
"As you wish, my lord," the sergeant said. "Do you have any, special insight as to where we should start?"
Kytus shook his head.
"She's hiding in the Force, so I can't actually feel her presence."
Realizing the seasoned sergeant would be too disciplined to ask the logical follow-up question, he glanced at the ceiling and added,
"It's more like a smell, Sergeant. A smell that permeates everything."
The sergeant received this with the calm composure of a man who had spent a lifetime accepting orders he didn't understand.
"Very well," he said. "And when we find her?"
"Alert me,"
Kytus said.
"I'll have to address this personally. Trying to handle her yourself will just get you and your people killed."
"Thank you for your consideration."
The sergeant sounded more relieved than he should have, and a little surprised.
"Then you think the Anakin Solo is going to survive this?"
The question caught Kytus off guard. It had never occurred to him that the Anakin Solo might not survive. He considered his answer for a moment, expanding his Force awareness to all corners of the Star Destroyer, and was surprised by the amount of pain, confusion, and fear that he felt. But there was also the determination and focus of a crew well accustomed to desperate battles, of beings who understood that their best hope of survival lay in keeping their heads and performing their duties. Kytus looked back to the sergeant.
"It's too early to know for certain, but I'll share a secret with you."
He laid his hand on the sergeant's shoulder.
"It really doesn't matter. We've already won."
A touch of doubt and disappointment flashed through the sergeant's eyes, and his expression quickly grew guarded and neutral.
"That's good to hear, my lord."
Kytus shot him a knowing half-smile.
"It's unwise to doubt me, Sergeant," he said. "We have won. I've seen it.
Titus left the sergeant to his unspoken skepticism and entered the auxiliary command center, where the personnel looked anything but confident of victory. The ship's officers were sitting at their consoles at the far end, shouting into their mics or at one another as they struggled to determine the extent of the Anakin Solo's damage. The command staff were clustered around a mostly blank holodisplay near the chamber entrance, looking less harried but worrying more. With so little reliable data to analyze, they had nothing else to do. Tahiri stood off to one side before a bank of unoccupied assimilation stations. She was surrounded by a mob of thoughtfully frowning moffs, speaking with their de facto leader, gray-haired combat Trim Lesserson, in the concerned tones of someone facing a sad, unpleasant truth. As Kytus approached, Lesserson abruptly stopped speaking and turned to face him.
"Lord Kytus, how good to see you well," he said. "I was just explaining to Lady Vela how worried we were about your welfare."
"That's true," Tahiri said. "The moffs seem quite concerned about your sanity."
The force boiled with shock and dismay, and several moffs began to sputter denials, their eyes growing wide and afraid. Only Lesserson seemed unsurprised by Tahiri's bold betrayal of their confidence. He watched her with equal parts hatred and admiration. Titus allowed himself a small smile of pride. As angry as Tahiri was with him, she had clearly decided she was not going to be anyone's tool. After allowing the moffs to sputter their denials for a moment, Tahiri turned to Kytus. With ice in her voice, she added,
"I tried to tell them you're just hut spawn, but for some reason they don't seem to believe me."
That Tahiri would speak to him this way seemed to shock even Lesserson. A dead silence fell over the group, and Kytus knew that how he handled the insult would determine not only how much authority he retained over her, but how the moffs viewed him as well. After glaring at Tahiri for a moment, he decided the best tactic was to exploit her outburst.
"Yes. Well, you know me so much better than they do."
He shifted his gaze to the moffs.
"The moffs will learn, I'm sure."
Lesserson and several others gave a nervous, testing laugh, which Kytus silenced with a scowl.
"Moff Lesserson, you'll be kind enough to fill me in on the discussion you were having with my apprentice."
Kytus made it an order, deliberately pushing his authority to test the moff's willingness to challenge him.
"Leave out the part where you suggest I'm insane. I really have no interest in your opinion regarding that."
Lesserson started to deny he had made such a suggestion, then seemed to remember how difficult it was to lie to a force user, and nodded.
"As you wish, my lord," he said. "I was simply expressing our concern over the tactical situation, and suggesting a course of action to change the tide of battle."
"Suggestions are always welcome,"
Kytus said.
"In the future, bring them directly to me. There's no need to trouble my apprentice with them."
Lesserson inclined his head.
"As you wish, Lord Kytus," he said. "I was suggesting to Lady Vela that we might be able to save the remnant assault fleet by disrupting the Hapen command structure at its highest levels. We do that with an attack on the Dragon Queen."
Kytus couldn't read Lesserson's thoughts quite clearly enough to determine what kind of attack the moff was suggesting, but he had no doubt about the real target. The Dragon Queen was Tenel Ka's personal flagship. If the moffs were talking about going after it, They were talking about going after Tenel Ka herself. And Kytus wouldn't have a problem with that, except that he had sensed another familiar presence aboard the Dragon Queen during his battle meditation. Just before the ambush, he had noticed both mother and daughter hanging on the far side of the Hapen fleet. At first, Kytus had been confused by the discovery, believing that Tenel Ka would never endanger their daughter by bringing her into battle. But then he had put himself in Tenel Ka's place and realized she had no other choice. He had taken Alana once, and Tenel Ka was not the type of woman to let that happen twice. She was the kind of woman who would keep her daughter close at all times, even in battle. That way, she could be sure that if Kytus tried to abduct their daughter again, he would have to go through Tenel Ka first. After taking a moment to compose himself, and to make certain his alarm wasn't showing on his face, Kytus tucked his hand behind his back and nodded.
"An interesting thought," he said. "Go on."
Lesserson looked vaguely but pleasantly surprised. "You're aware of how our nanokiller works?" Kytus nodded, remembering the blood sample the remnant medic had taken from Myrta Gev.
"You can tailor it to attack specific targets based on their genetic markers," he said. "All you need is a sample of the target's DNA."
"Exactly," Lesserson said. "But it doesn't have to be their DNA. It can come from a close relative. We were able to develop a strain for Boba Fett using his granddaughter's DNA, for example. And with Princess Solder being held captive..."
"Of course,"
Kytus said. He could see where this was going, and he didn't like it. Not with Alana aboard the Dragon Queen. But he couldn't allow the Moffs to see his alarm. If they learned of his weakness, they would not hesitate to exploit it.
"How is the Fett project going, by the way?"
Lesserson smirked. "It's complete, my lord," he said. "Admiral Atoko confirmed a successful delivery shortly before we left Nickel One." Kytus allowed his joy to show in his face.
"So there's a nanokiller waiting for Fett in Keldabe."
"Not just Keldabe," Lesserson corrected. "It was air dispersed. By now, it's spread across half of Mandalore. Once Fett finally tires of playing Starfighter Ace and returns to the surface, it's just a matter of time before he comes into contact with it."
"What about the safe date?" Tahiri asked. "I thought you designed the nanokiller so that it stopped being a threat after a few days."
"That's for the weapons strains," Lesserson explained. "The assassin strains, like the one we sent after Fett, can last forever. As long as they absorb a little light every 3 or 4 days, they never die."
"Well done,"
Kytus said.
"Thank you."
He expanded his gaze to include the rest of the Moffs, too.
"All of you."
Lesserson clicked his heels and inclined his head. "A pleasure to be of service, my lord," he said. "But it was for us, too. Payback for that attack on Nickel One."
"Even better,"
Kytus said.
"Fett should be taught that he's the smallest rancor in the pit."
"Quite," Lesserson said. "Let's hope the lesson kills him."
"Let's. But I don't see how a nanokiller can help us now,"
Kytus said, trying to dismiss the idea without seeming afraid of it.
"The battle will be over by the time your strain is ready."
"Not necessarily, my lord," Lesserson said. "The difficulty in developing the strain comes in excluding genetic markers from the target pool. If that's not a concern, the process can be accelerated. We could have a sample ready in as little as..." Lesserson paused and looked to Moff Reeser for an answer. "1 hour," Reeser said.
Like Lesserson, he was a hard-eyed man with a grim mouth and a military bearing. Two at the most. Kytus raised his brow.
That might be fast enough,
he admitted, growing more worried.
But deploying the weapon is still a problem. Even if we knew the Dragon Queen's location, it would take the whole assault fleet to support a boarding action.
Actually, we have reports of the Dragon Queen standing off on the far edge of the battle, Reaser reported. So slipping a party of commandos aboard shouldn't be a problem, especially if they look like the crew of a crippled missile boat. Tahiri nodded.
It just might work,
she said, turning to Kytus.
You know how Hapen royalty is. Half the officers aboard the Dragon Queen are probably related to Tenel Ka somehow.
It is an intriguing possibility,
Kytus said. He had never told Tahiri about Alana's paternity, so it seemed likely that she was supporting the Moff's suggestion because she believed it was a good one, not because she wanted to punish Kytus for exploiting her obsession with Anakin. Still, it did mean he was going to have to dismiss the plan a little more forcefully.
But a Nanakiller won't be necessary. We've already won.
Forgive me, but it hardly feels like we're winning, Lesserson said, looking as surprised as he did doubtful. And the few reports we have received from the field...
Moff Lesserson,
Kytus interrupted.
I see things ordinary beings cannot. Victory is ours already. There will be no nano-attack against the Dragon Queen or any other vessel. Is that clear?
Lesserson's jaw clenched, but he dipped his head in acknowledgement. As you wish, Lord Kytus, he said. I was only trying to save lives. Imperial lives.
Then do exactly as I say,
Kytus replied.
You will save a lot of lives, yours among them.
Lesserson's eyes flashed at the threat, but he knew better than to test Kytus's patience. You have my complete faith, he said. I look forward to your victory. Kytus could feel that the Moff was lying, but it was impossible to tell about what exactly. Did the fool think he could actually steal a sample of his soldier's blood from beneath Kytus's nose?
Our victory, Moff Lesserson,
Kytus replied. An explosion rumbled down from somewhere above, and he glanced up.
We're all in this together, wouldn't you say?
Lesserson's smile was more of a sneer. How kind of you to say so, my lord, he said. I was beginning to think you were more interested in our fleet than our advice.
Nothing could be farther from the truth,
Kytus said.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I really must go find my sister before she finds us.
The blood drained from the faces of all the Moffs, and Lesserson said, By all means, my lord. We'll make the necessary preparations for transferring the flag to the Megador.
I'm afraid there won't be time for that,
Kytus said.
The Megador will be busy saving your fleet.
This drew a murmur of surprise from the Moffs, and Reaser said, But that will leave the Anakin Solo exposed to another Stealth X attack.
Which is why we'll be following the Megador into battle,
Kytus said.
You can't win wars without risking lives, gentlemen. This is where we risk ours.
Kytus motioned Tahiri to follow, then inquired of the captain of the Anakin Solo about the Star Destroyer's condition.
After learning that the shields were the only critical system that would not be repaired within minutes, he congratulated the captain and the crew on their good work, then issued his commands. If the captain was alarmed by the prospect of following the Megador into battle without any shields, he had the good sense not to show it. He simply acknowledged his orders and turned to execute them. Kaidus nodded his approval, then started toward the door, speaking to Tahiri as he went.
"The true Jedi base can't be far from here," he said. "I need you to take a stealth X and find the transports that just fled Uroro Station. They'll show you the way."
"And that will matter because?"
Tahiri asked.
"Because it won't take long for the Megador to break the Hapen ambush,"
Kaidus explained.
"And then we'll be right behind you."
"Okay," Tahiri said. "But letting me believe we could bring Anakin back was a terrible way to use me. I still haven't forgiven you."
"And I doubt you ever will,"
Kaidus said.
"That was kind of the point."
They left the auxiliary command center and came to the turbo lift. Kaidus motioned to Tahiri in first.
"You go on up,"
he said. Kaidus thought about kissing her on her scarred forehead and wishing her good luck, and perhaps there had been a time when the gesture would have been welcome. But no longer. He had taught her an important lesson about trust, one that he knew would stay with her forever.
"I have something I need to take care of."
"Isolde," Tahiri said, nodding. "Too bad. I kind of liked him."
"Me too,"
Kaidus said. He could not help wondering if Tahiri knew about Alana's paternity after all. Perhaps she had chanced on him whispering the name in his sleep, or overheard something while he had Alana aboard the Anakin Solo.
"But I'm not going to take a chance. Not with this."